Looks like we might have a short call or a small group because I sent out the reminder kind of late. Megan, could you, Louis asked me if we could send out a recurring invitation for this meeting. Could you do that?
Like an Outlook calendar invite?
Yeah, for maybe the next, just like a, you know, one for the briefing calls and one for the topic calls.
Yeah, I can do that. And actually, I need to connect with you, June. We are increasing our Zoom accounts at CFILC. So this meeting is going to move to our disaster Zoom account. So the links will be changing soon.
Okay.
So when the links change, I'll send out the updated calendar.
Okay. Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Candace. I was in the other room. Okay. I heard you, June. You're like, hey, guys. So I was like, is everybody good?
Yeah, we'll probably, let's just get started. And if it's a short call, it's a short call because we often use the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, our next call on July 11th will either be on understanding and working with 2-1-1s in our local communities, or it'll be on a conversation about understanding what medical baseline definitions mean and how the utilities apply that definition as it relates to, you know, fires and alerts and warnings and discounts and everything else that the utilities are involved in related to power safety and power shutoffs. So that's what we're looking at. And we're also considering a call regarding transitioning and what's happening in the COVID space related to independent living centers assisting people in getting out of nursing home settings and other congregate care settings right now. You know, where are we? What's working and what's not working? So that's on the planning agenda. So we haven't locked in which date for what yet, but it's that's the deal.
All sound good.
Good. And we're always open to other issues as well. So anything hot that is comes to mind for any of you, this is a good time to say it. Well, hearing an overwhelming silence there.
This is Candace.
Yeah.
So the understanding the medical baseline and the utilities, that seems really interesting to me because I don't even know what it means. but the 2-1-1 is also because I personally haven't ever used it and have wondered about it as well as the 3-1-1. So that's what I got.
Yeah, and 3-1-1 is often not used in many communities, but it is used in LA. And I used it during the tsunami warnings that we had here because I was concerned and I wanted to test it. So I called and I said, you know, we're under tsunami warnings and, you know, I and others in this neighborhood may need help evacuating. And they said, well, just call the sheriff's department. And I went, oh, really?
Whoa, pass the buck.
Yeah, so I was not too impressed with almost that kind of advice. But, well, 2-1-1s are very much like independent living centers. They're all different. They all have different strengths and capacities and sizes and budgets. So it should be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I know that the Los Angeles City Department on Disability put out a message earlier in this pandemic about if people with disabilities needed support or had questions about things, they should call 311 and that would get directed to them. I actually did not try it out to see if it actually did get directed to them. But when we talked about it on the partnership, the 311, most people said that the people that answer 311 or the answering that you get from 311 most don't know much about disability and access. So I suppose I should just try it and like you did during the tsunami with the 211.
That'd be good. And again, I think 211 is much more common in many more communities than 311. Sarah, what's the situation with 211, 311 in Monterey County?
So it's the 211, the people that are manning the phones on or womaning the phones on 211 are volunteers typically, and so it depends on the training they've had. And I know with this with the COVID situation, that required a whole new set of training for these individuals because really everything was in flux and changing. So they geared up for that, which was helpful. But also it depends on the relationship with the different organizations. So some R211 does a pretty good job with keeping in touch with organizations whose mission relates to people with disabilities and access and functional needs. But when they're in flux too, it was quite challenging. I know we got a phone call that was totally inappropriate for the community emergency response volunteers, you know, that we could help find the right place for them. But, it depends on the situation, I think. But it really depends on the training they get.
Yes. And also, I think training is a baseline, but we all know when it comes to disability, the depth of understanding of the need, you know, is... critical and only goes so far with training people who are not very steeped in disability issues.
Right. And also they're going to silo people in disabilities. So they're not going to have any real understanding probably of, you know, if somebody's elderly, they're going to put them in whatever category is in their head or they've been trained to do. So I just think, you know, that it depends on the volunteers and the expectations can't be very high. So better to go through an organization that actually does understand your needs and make sure they're involved with 211 and they're training those people.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is what's the handshake between 211 and, for example, the independent living centers or the triple A's or the regional centers or the VOADs or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's move on to item number 3. Which is COVID, emerging issues, hot issues, updates from any of you? Welcome, Mario.
Yeah, mute myself. You always gotta scramble to find the unmute button.
I know.
Welcome, thank you. I'll put on my video too here. This is such a small group, I can show my face. Good morning. I, you know, let me get off these glasses here. I have kind of a COVID update. I'm involved in the Listos California program. We're a subgrantee. I'm a regional facilitator. I'm in way too deep in this thing, but it is what it is. And we were going like gangbusters about, emergency preparedness and all our different groups of these different grantees, mind face, but, you know, mainly people with disabilities and seniors and access and functional needs. But as soon as March 15th hit, everything kind of changed, the world all changed, and everything started being directed towards the COVID-19. Our Listos information was changed over to public health emergency information, and they kind of withdrew back on the readiness stuff, which I never did. It just became part, the health became part of what I was already doing. I'll never stop promoting emergency preparedness. But I was on a call last week. Well, now they want to try to like back off the COVID stuff, push the COVID stuff, and start getting back into the preparedness mode. And I explained, just like I told you right now, well, I never got out of the preparedness mode. The health stuff was just part of it, and we kept on going that. And they said, well, we want to back off that. And I told them, you can't back off on this COVID thing right now because it's not over. It's not done with. It's coming back. And that information still needs to get out there along with the emergency preparedness stuff. Now, Listos program, people are doing all kinds of things with it. I'm a small little independent living center trying to do the best we can without having to touch people and do stuff. We went to food banks and distributed emergency kits and information. We've been to the cooling centers now is what we're doing out here in Palm Desert, which is a hot spot for people that don't have a place to go. So that's, you have to rethink things. And everybody that is doing this is really, really rethinking and do a lot of stuff. But they're not progressing as it was. Governor Newsom wanted to reach 1 million people in this program by the end of the year. I was tasked to reach 10,000 in our agency, and it's just about the same for each of the other agencies. And we're about a halfway through, but in all actuality, we're about a third of the way through. We've reached about 3,500 of our 10,000, and some of the other agencies haven't been able to do a whole lot because their hands are tied because of what they actually do. So that's my COVID update to give you what the Listos program's going through, what I see on this side of the aisle.
Well, Tag Sarah, you're in it. You're also a Listos person. You're smiling and laughing and grinning. So put that.
Yeah, okay, Mario, we feel your pain. So in Monterey County, where the Community Emergency Response Volunteers has a project, one of the Listos projects as well. And what we did was do some grantees. So we're working with 15 different organizations that represent various different groups, nonprofit organizations that represent various different groups, from Special Kids Connect and to Alliance on the Aging, Across the Age Span, Centers for Independent Living is one of the organizations. And each of those, so when it was clear that what everybody needed to do was, as they say in the Listos group, pivot to COVID, we did kind of what you did in the sense that we didn't discontinue talking about emergencies and disasters and issues that were relevant to COVID as well. The organizations did have to and have done amazing jobs at reaching people more through online training, both in English and in Spanish, and actually in other languages, so that the materials that they finally gave us, our groups are actually using those, doing what we call Zoominars, and reaching people in pretty interesting ways. For example, with the kids, with a Special Kids Connect with your kids and families, kids with disabilities or and families, they did a two-hour Zoominar, and they invited they went through the, you know, the disaster preparedness stuff, but they also invited a first responder with his or her dog or dogs. So, and then they did activities as part of that. So we found that the creativity at the Alliance on Aging, how they've approached seniors who are really basically stuck in their rooms, because some of them without really much connections, but so the engagement kind of thing is not what was expected or what was put in their plans, but what they've managed to figure out using COVID as an opener, as you have, but then also moving into issues that, because, you know, we have storms here and electrical outages, and that's a big deal for people in some of these organizations, a big deal, like life-sustaining deal. And then the other thing that's happened, I think, in Monterey County because of the involvement of the different organizations is they're beginning to know each other and work with each other. So they're sharing, you know, I'm doing this in Spanish, invite your people, or, you know. So we're getting, and Monterey County is a very large county. Some of it's, and very diverse, because of the of how large it is, and because of the fact that part of it's a coast and part of it's all agricultural. So, but I think what we've been most impressed by is how creative these organizations have been to reach the people that depend on them and that they care about and that are part of their missions.
How was the participation in that Zoom conference?
Well, we've had 95 people come on for one of our first Zoominar.
That's great.
Yeah, and then the and one of the organizations we work with is Mujeres en Acción, which is basically an organization that supports women in South County who are mostly Spanish-speaking only, and stories that are, you know, and their mission is really to help these women become self-sufficient with their families, and also help them become part of their communities. And so these women are now, I think there's five of them that are the leaders, and they're now going out and training. They're doing their own Zoominars in Spanish. And, you know, so each of them is a little different. They're supporting each other. So it's all part of the organization's mission. It's just, and then also we've been able to, they can come to us and say, here's what we need. These women need, you know, they need a lot more than they're getting. They need money to pay their rent. So we've been able to help them by writing grants for them, so that they get more about what they need. And then, so we've done that for a couple of different organizations, is hire people to write grants for them. So, and the other thing, Mario, we said we would train 1,800 people. Okay. So we've actually, our numbers look better than that, but aimed low and reach high.
I understand. And also what I told them too is Listos did let us down. I went to Oakland at the end of February. Did you go to Oakland at the end of February?
Yes,
from their
we did.
Summit
yeah.
Here? And they did this beautiful 8-page ready guide that folds out to this thing you put up on your wall, explains everything.
See, it's behind me.
You got one. How about that?
Oh, yeah.
I had to bring mine back from Oakland.
No. This is one. This is, yeah, right. Okay. Go ahead.
Anyways, they were wonderful things, and we said, how can we get them? Well, they haven't been printed yet. We barely got these 200 for the summit. We just got those last month. We each got one box of 175 each, and I was supposed to reach out to 10,000 people. So I went out with the COVID thing. They said, oh, start passing out this COVID stuff. What COVID stuff? Well, I went out and had 5,000 black and white copies printed in English and Spanish myself, and that's how we're distributing it. So now I'm looking at having this ready guide printed in black and white and stapled along the one edge, so at least I have something I could give to people. Because the folks we're dealing with don't have internet access. Some don't have a
That's
phone.
Right.
They need something tangible they can put in their hands.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm still giving away my little emergency evacuation kits, which has some basic stuff in it to each person when I can.
You know that the new program they have with the markets?
I haven't heard. You tell me.
Okay. You know, you should go on. You should get off this call and go on the Listos call at 11. Because... that's when you learn the latest, greatest.
Right.
I'm being facetious there, but they have a new program that's reaching out to markets that are small mom and pop markets.
Right.
Which I think makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah.
And
hold
they'll
on one
give
second.
You.
I got somebody at the back door here. I'll be right back.
Okay. Anyway, June, go ahead, because I didn't mean to.
When you all say people have no internet access, Sarah, does that include their phones?
Does that, in a wheelchair.
But in looking at data, the data from, I can't remember the source, but they're trusted, says that even in poor communities, that the internet access via smartphones has really been very significant. Are you not finding that? Mario, you know, you both mentioned lack of internet access, and I'm wondering about through smartphones. I was under the impression that that had kind of changed a bit.
Well, that's
the data
true,
had gone up for the use. Go ahead.
That's true, too, but a lot of folks have the little cheap phones out here in this area. I mean, they're not something they can use to access the internet and things of that nature. I'm just trying to a small group. Well, that's true, too. Most people access it through their phones and stuff now. And we have a program, too, because of the power safety shutoffs. I got a grant from Southern California Edison for $35,000 at the beginning of the year. I went out and purchased 200 one-person three-day backpacks that has the basic supplies in it that last you 3 days. And then I'm educating everybody on how to customize it yourself. When a power shutoff comes, get a plan to get out of the house. Generators aren't going to help you. Backup batteries aren't going to help you for more than a day or two. So get a plan to get out. We're also including in that backpack, I went out and also bought 200 of these solar-powered battery banks. This is a 20,000 amp-hour battery bank that'll recharge somebody's phone 4 to 5 times. An iPad 3 or 4 times, a tablet a few times, but at least they have that constantly going. Communication is key until they can get out. Then, like I say, there's things available now where SCE will pay for a hotel, PG will pay for a hotel. So they need to know about this stuff. And like I say, so I purchased 200 of these backpacks in January. March just shut us down. We haven't been able to really get them out. But I'm starting to pick that up again. I still have 180 of them here to distribute. But that's what we're doing also, along with our Listos education.
Well, I just want to say that to the two of you, I really like that you blended versus pivoted. I think that there's really a lack of understanding when people just tell you to change directions. I mean, you both know emergency preparedness is not this or that. It's all hazards. And like, you know, there's so much that gets thrown at the wall and not thought through in terms of emergency prep. It just makes me personally ill, but I really like your, I really like the Zoominars. I really like the emphasis on relationship building. I really like the emphasis on addressing real needs, like paying the friggin' rent. But to both of you, I really don't like, in my opinion, this lack of meaning of the measure reaching blank number of people. I think it's bean counting. And emergency prep is not about bean counting. It's about resources and behavior change. So I nag Sarah, for example, to death when she tells me about this stuff. And I said, say, where is your enduring materials? When this all ends, what remains to be reused by the many?
So we really agree with what you said, June. That's why the bean counting is required, but it's not meaningful in our opinion. And so that's, we're not, it's happening, but we didn't, but we came in with a low number, so it was easy to reach. Also, we made a requirement for all the organizations that are participating that they provide 4 hours of training, not 15 minutes or an hour, but 4 hours of training. So because 1 hour is meaningless. We already know this because we've done community, you know, we've done emergency response training for years. And so the outcomes that we're looking for are behavior change. Mm-hmm. And that's being captured not through numbers, but through the relationships that, and we have monthly meetings with all these people and they share what they're doing. And they don't realize, some of them, how amazingly creative they are being, because they're just doing their job. But when other people listen to them on the calls, when the 15 are all on the calls, then they're hearing and they're building on each other's ideas and contributing their own. So,
Sarah, are the Zoominars? I love that term. Are they recorded and archived?
Yes.
Cool.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, not, so that's a yes and a no, because it depends on who's doing the Zoominar. If we're doing one, because we kind of did the first one as an idea about, you know, if you're, here's what it could look like. And we did record that, although I didn't start the recording exactly at the beginning. I screwed that up, but so that's for sure recorded. And then when other organizations that are working with us are doing one, they're trying to record them, but really some of them have never hardly used the internet. So they're doing great work. But they may or may not be recording all of the Zoominars.
And then the other issue is they need a platform to post it, because those are data.
Right. Yeah, we had one group that just did a Zoominar in Spanish, and they put it on YouTube. Uh-huh. But the reality of that is you couldn't really see the what they had on the screen. You couldn't read it. You could see it, but you couldn't read it. So you know, we're all living and learning.
Yeah, and to all of us, you know, we are about to enter a season of virtual major conferences. And we've all created, Megan, you included, instructions on how to make slide decks accessible. But they have to all be rethought now. Because when you look at slides in a Zoominar, the size is reduced even more.
So all of our stuff is captioned, yeah, that we do. but that's not necessarily true of some of the subgrantees. I'm sure that it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, interesting. Candace and I have been on national calls every day, and one thing I'm going to move now past the Listos thing. Are we done with Listos, or is there more? Anything more either of you wanted to add? You're good, Mario. Sarah? You good? Okay. I posted this 2 days ago on the Cal Disaster email list. ACLU, to their credit, did a petition to Health and Human Services at the national level in terms of the atrocities related to what's going on in congregate care and nursing homes. And it is a 30-page petition, but I urge you all to read it in detail because it really lays out in very clear documentation what's going on and what needs to be fixed. And from my limited legal understanding, this is a petition. It's a legal term. You know, the advocates call it a shot over the bow. It gives them a 3-week timeline to respond. And then I guess if there's no response, elevated legal proceedings begin. But I think what is useful for us at the local and state level is there are things in the document, particularly starting on page 19, that we can advocate for locally and statewide to make changes while we wait for the federal government to do it in what I always call geologic time, or, you know, legal time, which heaven knows how many years that may take. So really urge you to look at it very carefully. For example, one of the things it says is, you know, that the federal government waived the need for people to be in a hospital 3 days before they go to a nursing home. They also waived the requirement for pre-admission screening. That's a requirement that you screen people to do everything you can to help them not go into a nursing home, to retain their ability to stay in the community with the needed services. And that was also waived. And so this is a call to action, like, let's stop this now in California and at least start to save the few people who are left to save, in my opinion. But so I urge you to look at that. Have any of you looked at that so far?
Thank you, June. That's really important. We'll pass that along.
Yeah, Sarah, to your other groups, yeah, it would be good to.
Yeah.
And I guess before we leave COVID, we'll never leave COVID. Well, I hope someday we will, but a couple of my friends have had this conversation over the last few days. Is this ever going to be over? So, are we going to just live this now forever? But anyway, before we leave it, I think that's it. For COVID. Anything else you want to add, Candace, or anyone before we move on? Okay. The Master Plan on Aging, Anna's not on the call, but there is something that's come out, a 9-pager on long-term services and support. And I do think, I haven't read it yet, but it's a direct connect between if people get what they need in their home, then they don't have to go into one of these infected or potentially infected places as a last resort. So there is a direct connect between what's going on in the master plan for aging and you know, what we're trying to do to keep people healthy and safe in the disability community and protect their independence. So,
June, this is Candace, where is that? Where can we access that?
I'll post it. It's in my hundreds of emails, but it came out from DH, Department of Healthcare Services. I'll post it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thanks for asking. It's really important. And although it says aging, it's really not just aging. Although the people in the state have been kind of recalcitrant of changing the name, that it's more inclusive than just aging. Because, I mean, we're all aging, so I guess it is inclusive, but it doesn't sound inclusive.
This is Candace. You mentioned that that was Anna. Is that Anna Ogden?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I know.
Anna and Chris, Anna from Freed,
uh-huh,
and Christina from CFILC both sit on the, Anna's on the LTSS work group, long-term services and support work group of the master plan for aging, which is a state initiative.
Okay, thank
and
you.
Christina is part of that also. I think Christina may be on the executive committee.
She's on the advisory board, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. And and for everybody here, hi, I'm Candace Cable, and I'm a concerned citizen. I have a spinal cord injury from 1975 that I use a wheelchair, and I live in Los Angeles, and I have been woefully ignorant about emergency management or response or any of those kind of things, or never tapping into my independent living centers because privilege of not having to and those kind of things. So since March 16th, as June said, I had started attending those Partnership for Inclusive Disaster Strategies calls daily. And I feel like I've been going to school. And I'm looking for ways that I can contribute the knowledges that I have from the past before March 16th and the mass quantities of information that I've been learning about all the different aspects of public health and our independent living centers and emergencies and all of those kind of things. So I just wanted to say hi. And I'm kind of a little bit of a skulker, I guess, because I'm like listening, I'm like, oh, what's that? I mean, Mario, when you were talking, I was like, oh, I know someone who lives in Palm Desert, and she has a couple kids with disabilities. And I was like, hey, I'm going to get your address, your information from just, I mean, so, because I know they're connected, but to different things, but nobody is to everything, right? So I just wanted to say hi.
Thank you. It's kind of good to... This whole experience, I don't know about the rest of you, but for me, it's been rewarding to have new people paying attention that never paid attention before. So it's nice to have new friends and new allies and new advocates, and I hope it lasts.
Yeah, and this is Candace. I hope I don't pester you all too much with questions because I am a major Curious George. So beware.
Well, I think questions are good because sometimes we make assumptions about what people know. And I like to play that role, as you probably see on our 3 o'clock calls, by often saying, Marcy, what does that mean? Or, you know, what do those initials mean? Or what are you talking about exactly? Or where was it? just like you just did, what's DHCS? Where is it? Where is it? So keep it up. We need more people doing that because we tend to talk in jargonese and we always make assumptions that are not always inclusive. So keep good. So Vance he's not on the call. So that's a typo. Other handout issues. I don't know what I meant by that. Roxy, Region 9. Haven't heard much from them lately. I have been pursuing FEMA. You all should know that I did get some complaints about Project Room Key. Y'all know what that is? No. Yes. No. Okay. Project Room Key is a state of California project funded in a big part by FEMA. And it is a project that helps to house people who are COVID positive and homeless or are very, or have, and I might be getting this a little wrong, significant underlying conditions that make them very susceptible to COVID. And I received some complaints about the project in a certain area, passing over certain people with disabilities who needed accommodations. They're just kind of passed over on a list. So that incentivized me to nag and nudge and cajole and beg Roxy and Charlotte, our FEMA people, to show me the detail in the contracts with the state that spell out their ADA and 504 obligations. And I'm still pursuing that because I'm not finding that level of detail. It seems to be hidden in the kind of language we often see in any contract, which is in the back of the contract in very tiny detail saying, you will comply with ADA. And we all know, and nobody knows what that means unless you spell it out. So I'm still pursuing that with FEMA. And it also relates to the crisis counseling contracts and the Great Plates contracts. And I don't know how far I'll get, but I'm trying.
June, every week we, Monterey County holds a meeting, a virtual meeting with, there's about 110 people, and it's chaired by the person who's in charge of issues related to access and functional needs in the county during a disaster. And he's quite good. And your friend from CSUMB, whose name she's on.
Barbara. And,
yes, exactly. So I think if you could talk about questions, if you could pen a question for me to ask, because I know that that's being implemented in the county, I think, I will ask that question because I think what I've found is that any issues that are raised are addressed, and generally within a week. So it's pretty impressive group. But that would be helpful.
So Sarah, I will send you two things. I'll send you my communication with FEMA about the Great Plate Project. But I'll also send you the communication with FEMA where I and two of the artists, those are the regional people, Region 10 and Region 9 of FEMA, have constructed the kind of detail that would preferably need to go with a service like crisis counseling that offers over-the-phone services to make them accessible. So I'll send you both those things.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Legislative updates.
Hey, June, this is Candace. On that subject of Project Room Key and those people that had some complaints, did they file the complaints with anyone, like HHS or someone? Is that would be the appropriate avenue, or?
Thank you for asking that. That is the big problem. These people were willing to tell people they trusted, but they were not willing to be whistleblowers. They were not willing to make a complaint. And it's very frustrating.
Well, so I'm going to be like Curious George here, Candace speaking. Why? Or did they say? Is there some kind of retaliation or something that, or?
I can only tell you generically.
Okay. Yeah, you don't need to like names or any of that. I'm just curious what's
people are fear retaliation. They fear losing their jobs, not being protected. Yeah, all of that stuff.
All of the above. Okay. All right.
Because, and also, as you've heard me and others say before, the people who are experiencing the discrimination sometimes don't even know what they're experiencing, or they're so impacted by the event that they have no ability to file any complaint. They're just looking for their next roof or their next meal or their next, you know, healthcare intervention.
Right. Yeah. It's just so traumatized by the whole existence of living with a disability in a society that devalues you at every turn. Fully understand that. Okay, just checking, because I know we've had those conversations about, if we could get people to file complaints, man, we can. But there's just no way to do it incognito, huh, when you file a complaint.
I think it's a systematic issue in our country that even we, when we identify the person being wronged and discriminated against, when we file about a group, it's not good enough.
Right.
That the excuses, it's got to come from the person. And that just has to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the path of getting things done through complaint is just so past its time. And yeah, how do we change that? Good question. All right, that is all.
Yeah, I think that's a question we should bring up on the 3 o'clock call someday, because I'm not clear what the answer is.
Yeah, this Candace, it'd be great to, you know, jaw about it for a little while, what people's perspectives are. I mean, for everybody here on this call, we've also been talking about what are we going to ask the new administration for? Because we're all pretty convinced that there's going to be a new administration in the U.S. So that, so maybe that's a thing we can spin around to see if there's a way to transform that focus on complaints to actually getting stuff done.
Right. Good issue. Legislative updates. I can't think of any. Megan, do you have any?
Not that come to mind right now. Steve Farrell's Public Policy Committee is back to meeting next week, though. So, right. Okay.
The next CFILC, I believe that CFILC's contract with PG&E is in place. And as you all remember, that is a contract to offer emergency response during public safety, public shutoffs. And so by way of batteries and hotel rooms and food and charging centers and all kinds of things. So that's underway. And Mario, you're in SCE land, is that right?
That's right.
And so I guess a bunch of you also got SCE grants. SCE is Southern California Edison, which is another investor operated utility, an IOU. And like PG&E, they are looking to partner with community organizations to help people survive some of these things. So, Mario, who else got those grants?
I can't tell you right off the top of my head. I know we got it. I'm just dealing with the one we got, trying to figure out how to use it properly. But no, I'm not quite sure. Everybody has different ideas what to do with their grant. Our idea about the 3-day go bag and the batteries was my executor and I. We thought we need to get something in people's hands that they can, it's tangible, and they get the education along with it. So where is it at? But SCE is behind it 100%. They have other programs going on, like I say. It's just mainly getting everybody to sign up for their local electric companies alerts too, because even in Riverside County, we have some independent electrical companies out there that they need to make sure that they're aware of what's going on in those areas too.
Yeah, by the way, I love your, I'm not a fan of these Go Kits, but I love your battery backup thing that you showed. I bought one, I don't know if it's the same one, and it holds a charge for a long time, and it's also solar powered, so I can charge it with the sun, although the instructions say not to overuse that part.
Well, also that battery, if it was to be dead, it would take 56 hours to charge it up in the sun. So mainly what you want to do with it is after you've got it all charged up, you recharge your phone, then you take that, set it in a windowsill so it at least kind of maintain what's left, maybe put a little more juice in the back of it. But that solar panel is only the size of your hand, so it's not going to suck up a lot of sun and put it back in that battery. But it is better than nothing. I recommend that to everybody. And the go bag was just something everybody should have, especially if they have a caregiver or a family member that's taking care of them, and you just get it and go.
What about Yeti batteries? Are you going to be?
We bought one at our office. We tested it. It ran a refrigerator for 24 hours, which the power shut off between 2 and 3 days. So we deemed them pretty well useless. Plus, those Yeti batteries looked like some kind of science project on the front of them, trying to figure out how to use one of those and charge it back up. We also talked to people. I've owned a generator since 2005. I went through the Lake Arrowhead fires back in 2003 and had to buy a generator because I evacuated for 10 days. When I came back, there was no power for 3 more weeks. So you learn how to use a generator up there, but it takes a lot to keep a generator going for a couple of days. You got to have 20 gallons of gasoline on hand. You got to know where to put it. You have to have extension cords. A person with a disability won't be able to do that. Now, the folks up in Lake Arrowhead that had money, yeah, when the power went out, they had a little of the regular electricity come on. But at those times, those units were running $20,000 to $30,000 a piece. And they still are. These new backup systems they're trying to do, they're $100,000. Yeah, they'll help pay for them, but how long down the line is that going to work? You know, I mean, so that's why we thought, learn how to get out, find a place to go, family member, a hotel if you have to. You got this battery backup here. You got your go bag with your stuff in it, at least, and get out. But the power shutoffs, it's not like a disaster. It's not like an earthquake. It's not like a flood. You're not reacting to it like all of a sudden. You've got some warning on how to get out of your house. You just got to know, where am I going to go? I've got my stuff. Out we go. It's just basic stuff like we've been teaching for how many years now? Way too many. So it's just another layer with these power shutoffs on how to react to those. It's just getting the education out. That's the hardest part.
A lot to think about. Yeah.
It's not a fun subject.
Well, and this is a issue that may someday go away if the utilities do the right kind of mitigation stuff with putting wires underground, cutting wires, tree trimming, vegetation management, and everything we've learned that was mandated but not done over the last decade or two.
Right. Southern California Edison has a different grid system than PG&E. It's broken up into many grids, so they can shut down just a single neighborhood, a couple of blocks. They don't have to like blanket the whole city type of thing. That's what I found out last year when they did it. My block, my daughter lives a half a mile from me. Her power went out for 3 days. I maintained mine for the 3 days. She came over to my house. But those are the kind of things that you got to know ahead of time and make plans for it.
Yeah. Okay, well, any other issues people want to bring up? Just looking over the, see if we missed anything. Okay, well, my next actions are post the master plan on aging LTSS plan, send Sarah the FEMA issues, and I wrote down, you're gonna all be amused by this, charge your battery backup thing. I have it, Mario, I have it hanging next to my bed because I think in an emergency, if I'm ever trapped in bed, that's where I might need it. But I think it fell off my calendar as to when I'm supposed to recharge it. So I need to check. This thing holds a charge for a long time. It does. But so those are my actions. Anything else from any of you? Well, it was a real treat to have such an intimate group.
Hey, this is Candace. I have a question for everybody. What kind of 8830 things are going on? Totally off topic, but in your areas or maybe that you're involved with.
Megan could probably speak to that more than anybody. She's the eye in the sky there.
I wish I knew the date. What's the date for the online DCAT event, Mario? Do you know?
No, I forget.
Look up Disability Action Coalition, Candace. We do an annual advocacy day, and this year they've pivoted to be online, and it's in recognition of the ADA, I believe. And I don't know what else we're planning. I will let you guys know on the next call if you join, if I hear anything.
There is an event, Candace, at 4 o'clock on Monday. I just wrote Biden. You have to register for it, but it's probably a combination of a campaign thing and a ADA thing. There's a lot you can really want. I mean, careful what you ask for. I'm glad to send you all the email I get on this. It's a little overwhelming. You're on mute.
Yes, thank you. My computer even told me, hey, lady. So did you just say Biden is doing something?
Yeah, I can look.
Oh, okay.
You want all that stuff?
I think I get the Biden stuff that's kind of generic, but I haven't seen any ADA thing that.
Okay, well, I'll send you a few.
Okay, yeah.
There's a lot.
Oh, really? They're pounding away at people?
And NICO is doing their conference virtually in mid-July.
Yeah, I've already signed up for that. Okay. And
that'll be a good one.
And there's a couple of other groups that out of Pennsylvania, there's a group that they're doing 30 days of ADA 30. So I think they start tomorrow because they're going all the way to the 26th of July. and they have something every single day. And if you're interested in that, I'll send you their link.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Yeah, or if anybody is. Yeah. So lots of things happening. It's too bad there's not like a centralized calendar.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, well, good to see you all. And remember the three W's. You know what they are? Okay. They are wear a mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. Good way to remember. I like it. So, all right. Bye.
Bye, June. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.